could be brought in, because conspiracy, we argued successfully before the War Crimes Tribunal, was not a war crime. It went up to a Court of Military Commissions review, and that has been overturned and pushed back. That's going to go to the Supreme Court. This case has taken 5 years, and we're still sorting out the rules, the charges. And one thing that my co-counsel, we often talk about when we're making addresses like this, that people died on September 11th. 3,000 people died in the towers, at the Pentagon, and thousands of survivors followed them. And we hold them in our thoughts when we think about this justice that's delayed is impacting them as well. But why is it being delayed? The government has made these choices because they want to hide illegal conduct, because they want to convict with inappropriate evidence, and because they have little regard for the rule of law, they have more regard for gaining a particular sentence. Some of the things we're facing right now, on the 15th of July, we're supposed to go back for another hearing. This current hearing we're going back for would be, I think, the 39th or 40th pretrial hearing we've had since 2012, and we will potentially address whether we'll have a hearing to determine whether they even have jurisdiction over my client, Omar, and one other of the gentleman named Mr. Adam al-Hassawi. You see, when you assert that a person is a combatant, you have to prove it. And the government, in 15 years, has never offered that evidence. We've had to ask them to do that. And so we're going to fight about which witnesses come in, when will we hear from them, and whether the government's proof or our proof will be heard. But things that are that simple, that would have been handled in a court-martial within weeks, and even the federal district courts within months or years, we're still sorting out. And here's an interesting personal fact. I'm retirement eligible in 2019. I think I'll still be working on this case when my kids are in college. And they're only 8 and 10 right now.
Well, let's give the speakers a round of applause.
You have been listening to participants on the panel, Islamophobia and Guantanamo in the Trump Era, held July 6, 2017 in Northwest D.C., sponsored by the Institute for Policy Studies in conjunction with Witness Against Torture, the Center for Constitutional Rights, Defending Rights and Dissent, the Washington Peace Center, and D.C. Justice for Muslims. Participating in the discussion was organizer and moderator Maha Halal, the IPS Michael Ratner Middle East Fellow, and a steering committee member of Witness Against Torture. Also, Aliyah Hana Hussein from the Center for Constitutional Rights, and Luis Rumbaud Esquire from the Cuban American Alliance Education Fund, and Lieutenant Colonel Thomas Sterling, part of the defense team of one of the prisoners at Guantanamo Bay. And that will do it for today's show, raising up the voices of people telling a different story and telling a different side of the U.S. maintaining a torture prison on illegally occupied land in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. You can reach the show at onthegroundshow.org, where you can also listen to all of our shows. Please like our Facebook and Twitter pages at On the Ground Show. I'm Esther Avaram. Keep raising your voice. Peace.
KABU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Report from Kabul speech by Zahair Wahab on Wednesday, July 26th at 7 p.m. at the Multnomah Friends Meeting House in Portland. Zahair Wahab, a native of Afghanistan and director of graduate studies at the American University of Afghanistan, will present a critical analysis of the Afghani political, military, economic, and cultural situation. Again, that's a report from Kabul by Zahair Wahab on Wednesday, July 26th at 7 p.m. at the Multnomah Friends Meeting House, 4312 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kabu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Community Advisory Board will meet Thursday, July 20th at 5 p.m.
Have you seen KBOO's Fuzzy Boo Van? It's a giant furry blue Muppet mobile that brings music and joy wherever it's found in Portland and across the region. We're having a contest this summer. If you spot the van, post a picture on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter with the hashtag FuzzyBoo and you'll be entered to win a chance to have FuzzyBoo at your event, as well as other prizes. Each picture you take is another chance to win. For more info and clues on where to find the van, go to kboo.fm/FuzzyBoo.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor
Radio. Time is now 6.05 p.m. You're listening to Labor Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM. I'm your host, Nick Bubb, and
Michael Cathcart.
Mike, how are you this evening?
Doing great. How are you doing, Nick?
Like most Oregonians, I'm doing pretty well.
Well, it is sunny outside.
It is fantastically sunny outside, and it's sunny on the labor movement, particularly in our state.
Yes, indeed.
States are ramping up one way or the other on labor-related issues, and this week, Oregon is talking about the Fair Work Week Act.
Mm-hmm.
Idaho may have some bad news for workers. They have more stringent laws passed to enforce non-compete agreements, which hurt workers who want to take their valuable labor to someone who wants to pay them more.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we have stuff going on at the federal level.
As always, huh?
As always. So, in the spirit of non-competes, first off, let's just open up for calls.
Yeah.
If you've ever experienced a non-compete agreement, whether or not somebody's tried to enforce it, just if you have to sign one at work, call me up. Tell us what you think about it. The number is 503-231-8187. We want to hear about it. Number's 503-231-8187. So the Oregon Fair Work Week Act, this is particularly affecting people with scheduling-related issues is the primary concern here.
Yeah.
And so this is Senate Bill 828. What it's going to do is it's going to require that your employer give you 7 days notice on your work schedule. So if they say, hey, I need you to be here tomorrow, you can be like, sorry, Senate Bill 828 requires you to give me 7 days notice on work, and I already have plans, so good luck.
Yeah.
Additionally, they can't schedule you to close one night and open the next day without overtime pay.
Right. You have to have 10 hours between each shift.
10 hours off, yeah. And like previously what I'm used to like in the world is 8 hours off. In fact, my union, you got to have 8 hours off. And I'm like, well, that's good. Like 8 hours of sleep is good.
Right.
But then I got to commute, and then I got to get home and see my family. And
yeah, I mean, 10 hours is just barely enough time. If you have to commute anything more than about 10 to 15 minutes, you want to get home, decompress, maybe eat a little bit,
yeah,
get ready for bed, and then
catch up on Game of Thrones before the next new episode airs. I mean, there's important things going on. People,
it's got to be a work-life balance, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So I think this is a positive step in the right direction. It's sitting at Kate Brown's desk now, so I believe it's something that she'll sign.
It would be remarkable, too. It would make Oregon the first state in the country to have such laws in the books. There are some cities out there that have them, but Oregon would be the first. It would be the first statewide Fair Work Week Act.
We are. We're actually a fairly strong state as far as labor is concerned, and that's why they feel that after Wisconsin fell to the hammer of the right to work, regime.
Yeah.
I guess we've long feared that they're going to turn their efforts to Oregon to try and get us to go down that dark road.
Yeah, they have been looking towards the Northwest. Oregon and Washington has been in their sights. The Koch brothers and their ilk.
Yes, exactly. But some potential downsides and drawbacks to the Fair Work Week. Before you get too excited, it may not actually apply to you. It applies specifically to retail, hotel, and food service establishments. So, I mean, I get that that's who this is predominantly affecting, but why not apply it to everybody across the board? You know what I mean? Like, if I'm a car salesman, like, make them required to give me 7 days notice on my work schedule.
Yeah.
Or whatever I'm doing, you know? Maybe I've got a prestigious job. I'm an engineer somewhere, you know? I want 7 days notice, too. And then, did we say it? In 2020, it goes up to 14 days notice?
Yeah, that's the part we forgot. Yeah, so it starts at 1 week notice, and then it moves to 2 weeks notice after 4 years.
That's great.
Yeah.
The other drawback, though, and this might actually be a loophole for a lot of people, it only affects employees that work at companies that have 500 or more employees worldwide.
Right. Not just in Oregon, but worldwide.
Worldwide. So questions that aren't answered yet, though, like obviously McDonald's has, you know, probably close to 35,000-40,000 restaurants.
Yeah.
But if I'm a franchisee and I own one McDonald's location and hence I've got 50 employees, are those employees covered? Because McDonald's has that many employees, but my particular store...
Right. That's actually a great question. I mean, it doesn't necessarily lay out in anything that I've read whether or not it specifies franchises as differing from cohesive companies or not. It seems like, yeah, if you work for, despite the fact that you would work for an individual franchisee, you're still a service worker, you still work for a corporation that has, you know, thousands upon thousands of workers around the world. It should certainly include you, I think.
I think so too.
Especially because the articles that I read specifically call out McDonald's workers too, which is interesting.
Do they? That's fascinating.
Yeah, because they're pretty notorious for calling people off after, like, you know, 30 minutes on their shift, or calling them as they're walking into work and saying, "Hey, actually, it's slow. Sure. We don't need you." And it seems like there's a lot of argument, you know, on the side of the employers to say, "Well, it's a needs based system, and you know, we schedule for everything, but then we also have to adapt to the environment." But despite what the business needs, it should also include a healthy life balance to the work life.
That's funny. I remember one of my first jobs was actually McDonald's as a teenager. Oh, yeah. So I remember this same phenomenon happened to me all the time. You'd be there, you know, you're scheduled for an 8-hour shift, and wouldn't you know it, it's slow, and they send you home after, you know, 3-4 hours, whatever. I loved it as a teenager because I always had something to do, somewhere to go, someplace to be, and unlimited energy.
Yeah.
Now it's a little bit different. That would be extremely frustrating for me.
Yeah, it's one thing if you're living with your parents, it's another thing.
Exactly.
If you're paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah, I didn't have the bills then that I have now either, so it's a big change. So I think that's a step in the right direction. Some of the other things that I don't like, though, is... they don't actually have to give you your schedule. They have to give you a good faith estimate of your schedule.
Right, which is still allows the loophole for them to shift things. Like, I know that there's a clause in there that says, you know, if there's extenuating circumstances, or if it would, I forget the exact wording of it, but if it would, like, dramatically impact the competitiveness or the ability for the company to operate, they can opt, or they're able to waive this rule.
Right.
And that seems unfair, considering that the whole point is that, I mean, I imagine every company is going to then find a way to say, well, this would drastically impede our ability to operate.
Right, exactly. In some form. And then, I mean, the theory, the idea behind it is great. I totally agree with it. But then if you look at a company like, let's say Comcast. Everybody loves to hate Comcast, right?
Am I alone here? No,
it is. Okay, yeah. So people are super frustrated by this stuff. And they've got oodles, and they've got gazillions of dollars. Let's just call it like it is.
Yeah.
And so if one person is like, hey, you can't be changing my schedule, now you have to compensate me. And Comcast goes, well, actually, if you'd like to go up against our Goliath billionaire legal team, good luck trying to see whether or not we gave you a good faith estimate of your schedule or not. We'll let the courts figure it out. And it seems like that's something they'd rather do, is pay tons of legal fees versus...
Oh, yeah. Seems like companies, time and again, in every different situation, opt to cut labor costs before cutting anything else. That's the easy target for them, because it definitely takes up a large portion of companies' budgets.
It does.
But they always seem, I mean, we talked about this last show too, but they will opt, major companies will always opt to just engage in legal battles and pay their lawyer team of lawyers on retainer, rather than just providing simple benefits or, you know, some sort of accommodation to their workers.
Right.
Yeah, because I guess once you do it for one worker, if you're a large company, then you do it for everyone.
Right.
And all of a sudden, they in their estimation, it cuts down on their bottom line, despite the fact that, like, a company is there not only to make money, but it's also there to provide jobs and a living for people, you know.
Right.
So that should be considered in the argument as well.
Right. That's funny, you know, because when I went through the McDonald's management program, like they include in their training to take care of your employees, because they called them internal customers, right? And they're like, well, these people are actually who are generating the sales for you. You got to take care of them. But it never plays out right that there. Way. I mean, it's, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, you don't even realize what you're doing. And next thing you know, you've got these poor employees that are struggling to make ends meet.
Right.
And you don't view them as a human being. You just view them as an arm of your business, you know, or...
Yeah, it seems to be the case that, like, really since the 1970s, there's been such a eagle-eye focus from corporations and major companies on simply maximizing profits at the detriment of all other factors, most notably, you know, their employees and the labor costs and the well-being of their employees or the wages of their employees.
So here are some actual... figures for what's going to happen under this. They're going to have to compensate employees for schedule changes. So you don't give them the 7 days notice and then later the 2 weeks notice.
Right.
Here's what's going to happen. You got to give them an extra hour of pay each time you move their add more than 30 minutes to a shift. So
you give them a whole extra hour's pay on top of that.
Yes.
Great.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, obviously they're given a 30-minute leeway, which is great, because if somebody's not paying attention, you know, and they're supposed to get off at 6 p.m. and, like, you're 6:05 and you're like, oh, it's time to go.
Right, yeah. That happens.
That happens.
Yeah, it's just human error.
Exactly. So, also, you got to pay them that hour pay each time you change their shift with no loss of hours. So, like, I told you you're going to work 8 to 4, but now I've changed my mind. I really need you to work, like, noon to 8.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in addition to the 8 hours pay I got to give you from noon to 8, now I got to give you an extra hour pay to compensate you for the schedule change.
Yeah. There's... Oh, sorry, continue.
No, that's fine. You know, and I'm looking at this and I'm like, is this a hardship for businesses, you know, to run, you know, a fast food outlet, for example? And on one side of it, you could say yes, or you could look at the other side of it and say, you know what? They're managing this business. That manager's getting paid more money than me. The investors are getting more money than me. Maybe they need to be on top of their game, and to show their worth, they actually have to have their scheduling figured out.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it comes down to the consumer opting to, you know, buy products from or patron companies that actually treat their employees fairly.
Right.
Maybe that's part of the equation to make sure this goes nationwide.
Maybe it is. Maybe that's what we ought to do. We got to get Jobs with Justice back in here. It's been a while since we've had them on the show.
That's true.
At least on our third Monday segment.
There's. I just want to pull out an interesting quote from one of the articles I read about this.
Yeah.
Just sort of tying to what we were saying. There. I mean, obviously, the main opponents of this type of legislation are retail workers, retail trade associations and fast food. Trade associations, and a representative from one of those, I believe it was the Fast Food Operations Association, had a quote that basically said, with this business model, you know, we're offering workers entry-level opportunities, not living wages. And that just seems, I mean, I believe her name is Lois, but she goes on to say, you know, essentially, like, we have to operate on flexible schedules and things like that, but it's kind of insane to see that their business trade association or representatives of major companies saying we don't provide living wages. Not even trying to couch that in anything, just saying, coming right out and saying we don't provide living wages.
Right.
We are all about entry-level jobs, but what does an entry-level job at McDonald's lead you to? I mean, does it lead you to more jobs at McDonald's? I mean, does it lead you to higher upper management at McDonald's? I mean, corporate headquarters? No, I think it leads you to more service work.
Right.
And so I think that if they're really saying that they provide entry-level jobs, not living wages, that's just saying that we don't value our employees and we don't pay them fairly.
Right. And the reason this is sold for generation to generation is because there's an American ideal that you get up, you work hard, you pull yourself up by your bootstraps, and you get ahead, and that's how you get ahead.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think those days are around anymore, because you can't really compete with technology and robots. Anyways, if this is something that's been affecting you about your schedule at work, and you're excited about the Fair Work Week Act, or maybe you got a question about it that we might be able to answer, why don't you call in and tell us about it or ask us about it? The number is 503-231-8187. Also, we're going to be talking about non-compete clauses, mm-hmm. and if you've ever had to sign one of those, call us in and tell us about that. The number is 503-231-8187.
Or if you're an employer and you make your employees sign that, we'd love to hear the reasoning behind that.
Yeah.
Or what you think it benefit, how you think it benefits your employee-employer relations.
Yeah, exactly. So then the other bonus in here is like we're talking about, you go to work and they're like, oh, or you're walking in the door and they're like, oh, we don't need you, it's slow.
Yeah.
Well, they're going to have to pay you a half an hour pay for every hour that they cut out of your shift. So if you're scheduled to work 8 hours and they're like, don't bother, and they don't give you the 7-day scheduling notice like they're supposed to, they still got to give you 4 hours worth of pay. Bada bing, bada boom. That's awesome.
I mean, yeah, just for if you get ready for work and you do everything that it takes to do that and prepare for your day, and then you show up and you are cut immediately, that's still an hour to 2 hours, or possibly, depending on your commute, even more time than that, that you've already devoted to getting ready for the job. You've already planned your day around that, and then if you show up and they don't need you, I mean, it's a no-brainer for them to have to pay you, compensate you some portion of that.
And then additionally, and this is something, like, I never experienced this when I had worked as a teenager in fast food, but this is something that apparently has been happening. They will schedule people standby shifts where they don't pay them. It's like, okay, well, somebody calls in, we're going to need you and you're required to be here. But if we don't need you, you get nothing. Well, guess what? Now you get something. You're going to get a half an hour. You're going to get halftime for every for every hour you are on standby, which is fantastic.
To be on standby to go work the counter at a burger joint.
Sure, you know what? And good for it. It's good hard work, and those people are learning good valuable work ethic, and it's good to see that there's going to be some rules here that are going to benefit them. And obviously they're going to be frustrated, the people that are running these places, but here's the deal behind it. It's called insurance. You want to put somebody on standby, that's insurance. You know, you're betting that somebody might not show up, so you're going to pay somebody to cover them if it's needed. And guess what? You got to pay for insurance in America. It's the way things work. You want to cover yourself, it's going to cost a little bit.
Yeah. On top of that, I mean, it's part of keeping your employees, keeping your employees happy, keeping them healthy and able to continue coming to work, is if you provide them with some sort of compensation for their time spent.
Yeah. All right. Well, this seems like it's a good time to take a caller. It looks like we've got Carolyn on the line. Carolyn, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, wonderful. How are you today?
I'm doing okay.
Awesome.
And I'm calling because I'm a home care worker. I'm a personal support worker. I'm
a
member of SEIU. My sublocal, or part of the spoke, is 99. The state number is 503. And we just got in bargaining something along that line that you're talking about. And any home care worker can call in who has worked for an agency and wants their client wants to leave, and they have a situation on their hands. That's a specific segment of the working population,
uh-huh.
And that grouping is now going to have some help in that regard.
That's great news.
Yeah, it's good. I think this is gonna help a lot of people overall. I wish it was a little more affecting absolutely everybody. I didn't like that they excluded businesses with less than 500 employees, because I think that is gonna cover a lot of workers.
The big loophole is when you said international, because there are many local, statewide, or those who have businesses just in the U.S. continental. Or Turtle Island,
yeah.
Right?
Who now are possibly going to be exempted, and that's a huge loophole. And evidently, hopefully, in the next session next year, that loophole can be worked on if they're willing to include that kind of legislation.
Yeah, hopefully, this is just a launching pad for filling this out and including more workers and lowering the bar for what kind of companies are involved or are mandated to participate in this.
Switching gears just slightly, you mentioned the Koch brothers et al.
Oh, yeah.
We have to deal with the organization called Freedom Foundation, I think it
yep.
is.
Yep.
Absolutely.
And they also are going after unions, specifically SEIU style.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, my take is that, and I'm speaking just for me, that all unions need to be joining hands way publicly.
Solidarity.
Absolutely.
And working together way publicly, that so that the general population is aware that the unions are working on their behalf.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I would completely agree with that.
It's something I was pretty clear about 5 or 7 years ago, and it's something I talk about on a, you know, when the subject comes up.
No, that's fantastic.
So I think
yeah,
it needs to be pushed. The other unions that are not SEIU need to talk with SEIU, and there need to be some publicity in what newspapers will cover it, especially like as in KBOO.
Right. KBOO, Labor Press, Labor Notes, there's a lot of places that would love to publish.
Yes, that this needs to be really clear that everybody needs to know that we're together. And there's what's called coalition organizations, and unions need to be a part of those, and it also needs to be public. There are some good ones that SEIU as a 503 are members of, but I sadly don't hear a whole lot of other unions as part of those organizations, and it just needs to be way out there so that these organizations, these individuals, companies that are out to wreak havoc on Oregon society know that they're really seriously up against some unified energy, and unity is another part, is the bottom line that I live by.
Exactly. It's the only way that we can stand up when they've got all the money is if we all stand together.
Yes, and together means in unity. And it's really important. And I'm hoping that this call will light a few fires here, there, and elsewhere, and that this will come to pass as it's possible.
Absolutely.
Well, that's great.
Not in 10 years.
Tomorrow.
We
Today.
Don't have 10 years.
No, we don't.
I see. I got the gift.
Well, thank you very much for calling in. And
yeah, thank you.
I promised everyone out there we talk a little bit about non-compete agreements, and this is something now
right.
that's happening in Idaho. They've passed legislation to strengthen non-compete agreements, while numerous states and numerous courts have been throwing them out. Idaho's decided to strengthen them. And now, if you're going to leave a company that you work for in Idaho and your business deems that you were a key employee, then you are prevented from working for another employer.
Yeah.
And it is the burden of that worker to prove that it was not detrimental to the company they left.
Which is the exact opposite of the way that a lot of other states and cities are going. I mean, that the onus is really on the employer to prove, hey, this employee is free to move about, you know, free to move within the job marketplace. We have to prove that if they leave and work for one of our competitors, that will negatively impact us.
Yes.
In Idaho, they flip it on its head.
They flip it around, and that's not fair. And the funny thing is, you and I were talking before the show, and it's like the same people that are like, we need less regulation, we need less rules, we need more open, free market, less laissez-faire, keep the government out of it. That group of people has passed this legislation.
Right.
So what was the quote you gave me about socialism?
Yeah, it's
I believe Martin Luther King is coined with this one.
Yeah, he wants socialism for the rich, or the powerful want socialism for the rich, and
capitalism for everybody
for the poor.
Else.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
And that's, I mean, this is a form of that where major companies, I mean, the people who are in favor of this law in Idaho and the people who are proponents of it elsewhere, or the organizations that are proponents of it elsewhere, are major established employers. The people who are in favor of the opposite of this are not only employees who want to be able to have the freedom to move about, you know, move to other companies,
right.
but also smaller startups who thrive off of you know, poaching is maybe the wrong word, but thrive off of the free movement of employees and ideas.
Right, because who's growing their employees? It's usually startups. Established right. places are figuring out how to merge, acquire, cut.
Exactly.
Get rid of redundancy. Yeah, exactly, because mm-hmm. they're trying to get their bottom line, whereas a startup's trying to grow their sales, grow their product.
Yeah. And in a place like Idaho, I mean, Boise is such a hub for tech startups. To have this law go in place seems to really be a damper on that, on the growth of that particular sector there.
Interestingly, there's a case in Illinois where Jimmy John's was sued. I believe they had to pay a monetary penalty in addition to having their non-compete clause invalidated.
Oh, really?
So this doesn't just affect tech workers and engineers. This affects the bottom echelons of bottoms, not the right term.
The lower echelons.
The entry echelons of the labor market. And so Jimmy John's had a non-compete, and it previously stated employee covenants and agrees that during his or her two-year employment with the employer and for a period 2 years thereafter, he or she will not have any direct or indirect interest in or perform services for any business which derives more than 10% of its revenue from selling submarine, hero type, deli style, pita and or wrapped or rolled sandwiches, and which is located within 3 miles of pretty much any Jimmy John's.
I mean, that's crazy considering that if you are working at a Jimmy John's, I mean, most likely if you're going to be moving, you know, laterally, you're going
right.
to be qualified for that type of position elsewhere. It's not
right.
like there's trade secrets that Jimmy John's, the way they make their sandwich is different than other. I mean, like, you're not going
right.
to bring that and ruin the Jimmy John's business model because you go to Subway with it.
Exactly. And the people that have access to that sort of the secrets that they do have, they're not the workers that are making
right.
the sandwiches in the shop.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, that seems a bit out of control.
Right, and so here's the way that I look at it. If Albertsons, you know, has a deli and they want to hire somebody to work at Jimmy John's and pay them $3 or $4 more per hour to jump ship and come work for them, that is a boon to the employee. That's great for them.
Right.
They've proved their worth, and somebody else caught glimpse of that and was willing to pay for it. Why should we hold them back just for the good of Jimmy John's restaurant?
Yeah, and if it's a detriment to the employer, why is the onus on the employee to prove that they aren't hurting the employee?